Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report, a Friday episode where we kick back and it's nothing but fun. Fun stories like threats of civil war, people willingly breaking their legs, people kicking people in the back of their legs. It's gonna be fun. With me, Johnny Arola, and we've got a special surprise for you. Although the queen is gone, the king of Rebel HQ remains, and he joins us now. David Schuster, welcome to the show.
John, it is great to be with you. I can't believe this is such a crazy news week. There's so much going on. I think you and I could spend literally 24 hours and still not get to everything we want to talk about, but I'm super stoked to be on with you today.
Yeah, 100%. Like we do our production meetings every morning. We have to figure out what's going to go on the rundown and what's not going to. And there were so many stories today that I really want to talk about, but we couldn't fit it. Not on this rundown, not on the Damage pre-port that I do live on YouTube before the show. Maybe, you know, I'm going to be doing The Young Turks with Cenk Uygur and Nina Turner later on today. Maybe we'll be able to fill in the gaps of the news cycle there. That's my hope. Yeah. But anyway, very excited to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
As I said, we've got a lot to talk about, obviously. So everybody, I'm going to need you to buckle up and hold on to your butts. Please hit the like button if you haven't already. So notifications go out and blah, blah, all that. We're going to be giving you updates on the FBI raid, the legal situation there, which is developing in some interesting directions. Ron DeSantis' big political stunt, we'll be breaking that down. We've got some Melania Trump gossip. That's a lot of fun. And we will, of course, be closing the full show with the garbage people of the week. And I believe, David, your first time throwing someone in the can.
Oh, yeah, and it's actually somebody, I'll give a little tease, it's somebody that I used to work with and somebody that I once kind of liked and hung out with and had some respect for, even though we disagreed on things. So that's my tease.
Okay, so hopefully Cenk isn't watching. But anyway, I'm totally kidding, but it's going to be fun, so don't go anywhere. And by the way, along the way, if you want to send us any comments, tweets, super chats, or anything like that, we will respond as we go. We'll start off, in fact, by welcoming Locro. YouTube membership. Locro, thank you for being with us. And with that, why don't we jump into the news, starting with this.
You know the old saying, a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich if they want to. I'm just asking, if there is such a prosecutor and they indict you, would that deter you from running for president again?
I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it. And as you know, if a thing like that happened, I would have no prohibition against running. You know that. You've already.
I do. And that's what I want people to understand. That would not take you out of the arena.
It would not. But I think if it happened, I think you'd have problems in this country, the likes of which perhaps we've never seen before. I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it.
What kind of problems, Mr. President?
I think they'd have big problems. Big problems. I just don't think they'd stand for it. They will not sit still and stand for this ultimate of hoaxes.
Big problems, huge dumps of problems. I joke because you're actually facing the fact that the former president of the United States is clearly threatening political violence if he suffers the necessary legal consequences for the many, many crimes he has willingly committed that we all know that he committed. That's pretty dark. And we are going to return to some of what he said, like whether him being indicted would stop him from running for the president. We'll get to that. But let's focus now on the threats, because Hugh Hewitt there, who Trump has like openly mocked on the debate stage and all that, he kind of asked a follow-up question when Trump said there would be big problems. Trump just repeated big problems because Trump, despite having this this myth of him being an alpha, he is alpha enough to threaten to send his many followers to kill his political opponents, but not enough of an alpha, not a brave enough man to actually just say it. We all know that that's what he means. We can see it. His audience definitely gets that. That's why they love it when he says things like that. But he isn't going to actually come out and say it. It's just vague. We've never seen. It's never going to. There's going to be problems. They're not going to stand for it. And we take one more step down the path of normalizing threats of not just like specific political violence, but widespread nationwide political violence if he is indicted for the crimes that we all know he committed. David, what do you think?
Well, there are two points that come out of this that I think are really intriguing. First, the one you just mentioned, that is, yes, clearly Donald Trump is signaling to the Oath Keepers, the Promise Keepers, the Proud Boys, all these sort of right-wing nationalist groups that, yeah, get ready for violence if they go ahead and indict me. And I think that's so reprehensible and irresponsible on so many levels. But the other point that stands out to me is this underscores how troubled and how enraged Donald Trump is by this, and perhaps how worried he is by this particular investigation into the document thefts and what happened in Florida. And there's been some reporting, like by Betsy Woodruff, who pointed out that Donald Trump has already paid $3 million to a lawyer who's representing him in this particular probe. And Donald Trump is not known for actually giving any money to lawyers. So it underscores he's really worried by this one.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And we'll be diving a little bit more into the details in a bit on that. I agree with you that he does seem a little bit worried. The fact that he would bring up the, hey, everybody, I can still run for president if I'm sitting in jail. Like, you would not generally concede that you might end up in prison. But yeah, I just let's focus on the violence for just a second, because Donald Trump loves to say things like, as he said there, like we've never seen. Here's what we've never seen. I don't think we've never seen a guy who was the president able to constantly threaten violence and suffer no consequences whatsoever. And I don't just mean like in this case, or even referencing, you know, the stand back and stand by for the Proud Boys or whatever. So he openly just spreads QAnon memes. He does it in the wake of the QAnon dad killing his family this last weekend. Right after he shares the memes, the insane clown goes to a Dairy Queen and says that he wants to kill all the Democrats and the libs. Trump will continue to spread QAnon memes, knowing that it inspires his followers to kill their family members, random people, whoever, whatever, kill a lot of people. He gets in no trouble for that. No trouble for encouraging the militias. No trouble for encouraging people to believe that the fate of the MAGA movement might come down to them killing a bunch of people. And we are seemingly, David, as a society, as a legal system, as one side of the political spectrum, we are absolutely defenseless against this. There's apparently nothing we can do. There's no line he can cross where he will suffer any consequences whatsoever.
Yeah, that's right. And it's almost as if there's a normalization now in our society of his activities, his actions, his instigation of violence. And I thought it was so intriguing that when there's Donald Trump going to the QAnon conspiracy stuff, sure, MSNBC was covering in terms of mainstream media, but the rest, CNN, Fox, they weren't sort of going there, even though you have a president who is now openly encouraging this ridiculous stuff. It's as if, oh, well, that's just Donald Trump, so we don't really need to talk about it, and that's just how it goes, and so be it. You know, we'll just not worry about it. And I think the moment that our society has become sort of normalized and thinks, well, this is just Donald Trump, that's when we really do get in trouble. Because as you point out, there are the people who are going to go after, you know, the police officer who shot Ashley Babbitt, the FBI, the Department of Justice, the judge in Florida. There are crazy people out there who are simply just looking for permission to go ahead and carry out the sort of violent impulse that they may have. And when they see Donald Trump sharing that violence, then watch out.
Yeah, 100%. I realize, by the way, I'm missing multiple different sorts of political violence that, again, the inspiration for it hasn't come with any consequences. We just found out they caught the person that called in the bomb threat against the Boston Children's Hospital. The people who had been demonizing falsely based on misinformation, that particular hospital obviously will suffer no consequences. The next time, maybe it just won't be just a bomb threat. Maybe it'll be a bomb. Maybe doctors will die. They will still suffer no consequences whatsoever. When they demonize drag queen story hours and people show up with guns, people show up and start beating the performers, there's no consequences for that whatsoever. They can do literally anything they want, and we have nothing that we can do that can actually stop them. By the way, legally, in terms of one of the claims he made, he's pretty much right. He said that if he were indicted, it wouldn't stop him from running. It would be no prohibition on him stopping. And he's right in multiple ways. So first of all, legally, we've had people on to interview about this in the past. He could run for president from prison if he wanted to. That's according to multiple legal scholars. He could totally do that. By the way, I want to jump to graphic three. Asked about whether Trump would run for president if he were incarcerated, Jason Miller, his spokesperson, told Insider, this is legitimately the stupidest press inquiry I've received in 2021. Well, it's looking a little bit less stupid and a little bit less hypothetical right now. But beyond just legally him still being able to do that, my fear is that, like, realistically, it isn't a prohibition on him running. Like, do we Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm in a bubble. David, you're more worldly and have a lot more experience in politics than me. Would that actually stop him from being the nominee? What percentage of Republicans would refuse to support a guy who was doing debates in an orange jumpsuit behind bars?
Maybe I'm too much of an optimist about some of the Republican Party, but I still believe there is somebody out there who's got some political skills, some political talent, who would be able to make a case, look, this is insane. We have somebody who's seeking the nomination who has committed crimes or been charged with crimes or in jail. The Republican Party can't do this. And they would run ad after ad after ad. And we know the Republicans are good at, you know, killing one another. I mean, they're more brutal with each other than they sometimes are with Democrats. And I'd like to think there's somebody out there who would then turn all of those ads against Donald Trump in a Republican primary fight. But to your point, I mean, look, there's nothing stopping Donald Trump from running. And I would argue that if we're going to look at this purely in a political sense at this moment, I think this is great news actually for Democrats in the 2022 midterms, because at a time when Republicans are trying to turn this back to inflation and to the economy, every time Donald Trump opens his mouth and every time there's a ruling in Florida that stretches out the decision by the judge down there over what to do with the documents, it dominates another news cycle. And every news cycle that we're talking about Donald Trump, I think, frightens a lot of independents and moves a lot of people towards Democrats in the midterms. And I think that's one of the reasons the Democrats are starting to pick up some momentum.
Yeah, I think that you might be on something. Well, let's update people on a little bit of the legal process that might result in Trump maybe running for president from prison. We're going to have a special master, okay? And it's going to be the special master that Trump requested. Isn't that a weird sentence? District Court Judge Eileen Cannon just yesterday denied the DOJ's request to exclude classified documents from the special master review and appointed Raymond Deary, the man Trump's legal team had chosen, to oversee the review of those documents. So now Raymond Deary, this ex-judge who apparently has a lot of experience, including in matters involving intelligence, will be charged with sifting through the records recovered from Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence, including the classified material the DOJ did not want him to have access to. So despite the fact that this is as classified material as anything can be and is very much in many cases on a need-to-know basis, this guy, who I don't think has that qualification and definitely doesn't need to know these things, will be sifting through all of those. So he will have access to these sorts of documents that previously you had to either be the president, one of his top aides, or a random person walking through the hallways of Mar-a-Lago to see. And by the way, the order will also continue to block the government from reviewing those materials for investigative purposes. And so that's going to drag out the actual investigation. So this guy is going to be looking at them rather than the DOJ as of right now. This is all pretty much lining up with what Trump and his team wanted, David. What do you think about this?
I think it simply delays the inevitable. First of all, I hope Raymond Deary, if he were to apply for national security clearance, would get it, that he's ironclad in terms of his responsibility, that he's somebody we could trust with the nation's most sensitive secrets, because now he's about to get them. And I hope there's no danger whatsoever that Raymond Deary might have, I don't know, something that could convince him to sell these off or do whatever Donald Trump was thinking of doing. But inevitably, the Department of Justice is going to file, has already sort of filed an appeal on the judge's ruling. I think it's only a matter of time before this case finally sort of swings back towards the Department of Justice and that they can use these documents as part of the investigation, or that the Raymond Deary actually sorts through them and figures out where things need to go. And again, I think the longer the Donald Trump team is successful in stretching this out, it may be good for them, it may be good for them in the short term, but I think it's terrible for Republicans in the long term, because again, it means this continues to be part of the news cycle and there's no resolution perhaps for a little while, but there's certainly gonna be a resolution by early next year.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, as of right now, it says that Deary has until November 30th to complete his review of the materials. I don't know if that means that that's when his conclusions would come out, let alone that we would have access to them. It might take longer than that. And that is not 10 years from now, but there are a couple of consequences of it being at that point. One, we will not know anything more apparently than we know now before the midterms. So in terms of this story's ability to impact the midterms, it might have maxed out already. So that's one thing. The second is, in terms of the eventual effect it'll have on the population, like, there is no reason why waiting a couple more months should matter. But I do feel like, especially with Trump, you take a story that hits, And everybody who's not, you know, armored in the Fox News bubble knows immediately how bad it is, how significant it is. And then the longer it takes for there to be updates, the longer it like, it just becomes normalized. Like, anything can be normalized in 2022, no matter how bad, no matter how obviously unacceptable. Simply waiting, like, you know, we're going to be talking a little bit later on about Ukraine. Like, you know, people aren't nearly as shocked today as they were, you know, 5 months ago. It's still unacceptable that Russia has invaded and attempted to conquer a neighboring country, but anything can be normalized. And so I'm worried that the fact that Trump knowingly stole hundreds of classified documents, committing hundreds of crimes potentially, like the effect, that the likelihood that people are going to be really shocked by it, I feel like that's waning day by day.
I'm going to disagree with you slightly, John, and that is, I do think people will be shocked because the drama, it continues to sort of build up. There's more anticipation. And so when the news finally does come, it's something that's sort of been bubbling out there. I think it'll be on more people's radar. And then also regarding the midterms, I have it from pretty good sources at the Department of Justice. People used to work there. There was no intention that the DOJ had to do anything in terms of indictments before the midterms.
Okay.
So they were within that 60-day window. So even if they had the case, even if they had the obstruction of justice and the violation of the Espionage Act and mishandling classified information, they were going to hold that indictment until at least, you know, mid-November. Okay, now maybe it means, because they don't get the documents until December or January, maybe it stretches out into the wintertime. But I don't think it's going to change how the indictment is received. People are either going to be really excited to see Donald Trump finally have to serve some sort of justice, or Donald Trump supporters are going to be infuriated and take the streets and engage in violence. But I think it's going to be a big deal regardless.
Yeah, I mean, one other thing that it might take that conclusion out to is an increasing likelihood that it'll be after Trump declares that he's running for the presidency.
Right.
Like, I mean, Trump honestly could declare later this afternoon for all I know. But January, February, I feel like that's possible. And so that's gonna definitely change how the right wing views it. Obviously, the crimes will have been committed long before that. It'll be irrelevant that he's running for president, in fact. But for them, the perception, they'll consider it such a grievance.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think, look, it's going to put, never mind the pressure that it's going to put on Donald Trump, I think for any Republican who's thinking of challenging Donald Trump, either, you know, they are similar to Donald Trump, or they're, you know, more of a Liz Cheney type of Republican, the pressure that is going to be on them to figure out, okay, how do we leverage this indictment, this news that is coming, in a way to make sure that Donald Trump cannot win the nomination, whether it's, you know, advertising, whether it's fundraising, all the sort of things that happen in primaries of both sides. And I just hope that the Republicans who are going to decide to run against Donald Trump, that they are ready to seize this news and make sure that Donald Trump doesn't, you know, win a primary, doesn't win a caucus, because if he does, I do think there's still a chance that Donald Trump develops some momentum and people saying, that's just the deep state indicting him, and I want Donald Trump to be my nominee.
That is a very reasonable thing to expect, but these people are spineless when it comes to Trump.
Right.
It's possible. I'm sure DeSantis has a war room that is trying to figure out strategies, but we're going to have to see. Okay, with that, we are going to go to our first break. We come back, we'll give you all of the updates on the Ron DeSantis migrant kidnapping story, including potential legal consequences for it. All that and more after this. Ron DeSantis has largely gotten what he wanted with his insane racist stunt, where he effectively kidnapped a bunch of migrants and then sent them to a blue area, basically. He's gotten what he wanted. He might get more than he wanted, though. And we want to catch you up on all the details on this stunt. But first, approximately 50 Venezuelan and Colombian migrants landed in Martha's Vineyard Airport Wednesday afternoon, were left to find their way into the town with little to no information about where they were or where to go for resources. State Representative Dylan Fernandez told the Vineyard Gazette that some of the migrants were, quote, told they would receive housing and jobs immediately upon arrival, yet the island was not notified of the transport before it landed. So lying to these people about what would happen when they got there, and then just leaving them to maybe find civilization, maybe just die, that is not how you treat people that you have even a minimal amount of basic human respect or any empathy for. And so that's what they did. These 50 people were not people to Ron DeSantis and his team. By the way, he used Florida taxpayer money to pay for the flights, but here's the thing. They weren't like migrants from Florida. They originated in Texas. migrants interviewed by NPR reported being approached in San Antonio by a woman named Perla, who offered them transportation to Boston. Unclear if Perla works for Texas or Florida. I don't really care at this point. The flights they were put on made brief layovers in Florida, North Carolina, before landing in Martha's Vineyard, where someone on the tarmac filmed exclusive footage for Fox News. So here's basically what's happening. Ron DeSantis, for months, has been incredibly jealous of people like, for instance, Greg Abbott, who first began transporting migrants from border towns to cities like Washington, D.C., back in April. Abbott, at the time, said he was chartering the buses to, quote, help local officials whose communities are being overwhelmed by hordes of illegal immigrants. So really, really racist there. But here's the thing. Ron DeSantis is like, I want to do this, but we don't have these migrants. It's not an actual problem. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to find me some migrants in a different state, pretend that it's our problem. I'm going to spend Florida taxpayer dollars to lie to humans about what's going to happen to them, strip away any right to consent they have on where they're moved, and then I'm just going to ship them somewhere. And I'm going to tell Fox News in advance, so they have cameras on the ground. I'm not going to tell the area I'm sending it to. I don't care if they have the capacity to help these people. I don't care if these people live or die. I want to make sure that I have a nice little bit of video that could go on Fox News so they can praise me. And they did. We'll get to that. But David, like, every added detail of this is so fundamentally disgusting.
Disgusting is the word I was actually thinking. I mean, abhorrent, disgusting, embarrassing. I mean, that this would happen in the United States of America. And look, I get that politicians use human beings as props all the time. But there's a difference between getting a bunch of school kids to appear in your television commercial campaign ad and actually putting people on a plane, many of whom do not speak English, sending them someplace they've never been with no guidance whatsoever as to what's going to happen when they're there. Thank God, at least, that the people in Martha's Vineyard welcomed them with open arms and wanted to help them and try to reassure them that everything was going to be okay. I have a feeling if they had been sent someplace else, say, like back to Florida, people would have been like, ah, who cares? However, that doesn't change just how reprehensible it is for a governor in the United States to actually put people on a plane and treat people this way is just so horrible. There's not even words for it. And it's just, yeah. It shows that it shows how shallow Ron DeSantis really is.
Yeah. And by the way, I think this is a pretty strong signal that, you know, we've talked about some of the differences for some time between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis and what they would be like as president. And there's a lot of interesting things that can be said about that. You know, Ron DeSantis seems like, although he's not particularly intelligent, probably a little bit smarter than Trump, a little bit more capable of staying on message, accomplishing his agenda, which he probably has a more thorough agenda than Trump would. But often in those conversations, we assume, well, but Trump is worse. Trump is more anti-democratic. Ron DeSantis is cosplaying for the right wing or whatever. But I don't know about that. I don't know that Trump would have thought to do this. Trump is awful. He'll do stuff like a Muslim ban or whatever. But this seems like more insidious, more targeted than Trump is random and flailing. This was planned. Many people had to know how awful their plans were, and they went through with it. And so, and DeSantis is going to want to keep the base on his side after he becomes president too. So what would 4 years of this sort of man being in the White House look like?
Well, and look, Donald Trump, I mean, and I agree that, you know, Donald Trump might have been able to do something like this. But the difference is Donald Trump would have smiled and laughed and done it with sort of a glimmer in his eye. And that's one of the ways that he sort of disarms his own people. They think, aha, this is just a joke and we're part of the joke. DeSantis is known for being really prickly, kind of a cold fish, somebody who's, I don't know, I can't use the word, but D-bag-ish. I mean, and so when you do something like this, and you do it with sort of that meanness that Ron DeSantis sort of gives off in his own personality, then it's no longer really sort of funny. Even if you're a Ron DeSantis supporter or somebody who thinks that this might have been creative if you're, you know, somebody on the far right, this just comes across as mean. And Ron DeSantis, with his sort of grimace and the prickly nature of him, underscores the meanness. And I think that's why politically something like this would actually hurt Ron DeSantis more than it would hurt Donald Trump.
Yeah, maybe. There's a lot about this that should hurt him. We'll have to see if it actually does. I mean, the history of it should hurt him. The fact that the white citizens' councils back in the 1960s did something very similar to this, lured black people onto buses with promises of jobs and then just sent them to the north. And actually, one was sent to the home of the Kennedys back in 1962. So on the 60th anniversary, effectively, almost the exact same thing being done. So Ron DeSantis is either unknowingly or more likely knowingly putting himself in the ideological timeline of the white citizens councils from the 1960s. So that's fun. By the way, as I said, there are multiple people around him who are at least as awful as he is. Christina Pushaw, who helped more than anyone else individually to begin the whole groomer thing that is definitely going to result in people being murdered, tweeted, Martha's Vineyard residents should be thrilled about this. They vote for sanctuary cities. They get a sanctuary city of their own. And illegal aliens will increase the town's diversity, which is strength, right? And that right there sums up what was supposed to work in this case. It wasn't just that they wanted to do it. It wasn't just that they wanted to get the video. They wanted to show, no, all of you say that we're racist. You're just as racist as us. I mean, we obviously don't want these people here, but neither do you. You're hypocritical. You don't want to actually see these people. And here is where the joke is on them, but fundamentally more on America. So when the migrants showed up, do you know what happened? Volunteers rushed to help them. They brought pizza, salad, and soup. The head of the Democratic Council of Martha's Vineyard said people were just showing up at the church with food, rice, and beans. When something happens to our island, we come together to help. We are going to take care of these people. And that's what they did. They did not get triggered by the presence of these people. They did not try to kick them out. The issue, of course, is that the right wing was desperate to see that everyone is equally racist. So the fact that that was proven wrong is not going to faze them. Breitbart is inventing fake private comments about how they don't want the migrants here. All of the right-wing tweeters are just tweeting that the leftists in Martha's Vineyard lost their mind and hate the migrants. There's no evidence of that, but they have to have their narrative. And so again, like, the joke is on them. Their stunt failed, but the joke is on us in that it doesn't matter. Nothing has to be what it was supposed to be. They can just make it whatever they want, David. They can just invent, no, everybody's racist, and so it's all the level playing field.
Right, it's part of the fact-free narrative that the right has long embraced. And it gets to their assumptions that the right makes about the left, and sometimes they're correct, but a lot of the times the right has absolutely no idea what really happens on the left because they have this caricature, they have this stereotype, and they're in this sort of bubble where they're talking about the stereotype to one another. And as a result, somehow they're surprised that these people would be welcome with open arms, and then they have to make up some sort of fiction in order to get back to the original idea as to why they did this in the first place. And it just sort of underscores the bizarre bubble that I think a lot of Republicans are living in.
Yeah. By the way, we had a comment from someone who asks, you can see it right here, why does that say Texas? No, I can't stress enough. It's because he spent $12 million of Florida taxpayer money to send planes to Texas to pick up migrants that had never been in Florida and send them from Texas to Massachusetts. Like, it's important that you understand how, like, constructed this entire thing was. That's what they did. And they might face consequences. Did you know that you can't do this as a state government? You can't, without consent, ship people from one state to another, let alone with your state not even being one of those states. You can't actually do that. And so we'll have to see about the potential legal consequences. I'm going to assume that Ron DeSantis will be perfectly fine. And if they ever do investigate him, I mean, he might run for president someday. Clearly, he's allowed to commit whatever crimes he wants to. But anyway, I do now want to get to sort of the point of this. This is designed to start a right-wing news cycle, a news cycle that's going to be filled with racist rants like this one from Tucker Carlson.
As of yesterday morning, that island was 89% white. Unfortunately, and this really is the point, Martha's Vineyard is one of a dwindling number of beautiful places left in our country. Martha's Vineyard is what most of America once was, not all that long ago. Small, socially cohesive, orderly, safe, with traditional human-centered architecture and big stretches of nature unspoiled by industrial wind farms and dollar stores. The people who live in Martha's Vineyard now didn't build any of that. The people who did build it are long gone, along with the attitudes and values that made it possible. The people who live there now just came for the nostalgia, and all that's left, really, are the buildings and the beaches, but still you'd hate to see them wrecked. On the other hand, at this point, we may have no choice. No sane country would allow millions of foreign nationals to walk across its borders illegally and then immediately give them government benefits in exchange for mocking our rule of law. No one would ever do that. It is suicide. Over time, it will destroy the United States. This is our country. We were born here. We plan to die here. We have nowhere else to go, and we don't want to live in a slum.
I think it's safe to say that a rant like that could not have been on the news 5 years ago. Like, I don't think you could have said, like, that is one of the most explicitly racist things I've ever seen a person in a suit and a tie say into an expensive camera and suffer no consequences for. He said, we used to have lots of these places that were white, that were beautiful, and now, unfortunately, we don't. They're being wrecked by migrants. They're being wrecked by non-white people. Their social cohesion is being destroyed. They're being turned into slums because they're not these lily white places anymore. That is not the subtext of what he said. That's the text of what he said. You could read all sorts of additional stuff into it, but Tucker Carlson, as of right now, we're in, was September 2022, he is fully confident that he can simply say explicitly racist things as commentary on the topical news of the day, and he will suffer no consequences, and his audience will love him more and more for it, David.
I think that's such a good point about how much our sort of values have changed and our standards have changed. I remember, I think it was only like 9 or 10 years ago, when another former colleague from MSNBC, Pat Buchanan, was bounced out for saying things, for writing things that were far less incendiary than what Tucker Carlson just said. And Pat was sort of said, okay, you're out of here, goodbye forever. And yet Tucker Carlson is celebrated and people on the right say, aha, he's onto something, when it's so clear, I think if you step back, yes, it is obviously racist. We all know what Tucker Carlson is getting at. And when he talks about the beaches being ruined, I still don't understand how do 50 people from Venezuela and Colombia somehow ruin your beach? I don't get that, unless, of course, you were somebody who was racist, who is afraid of people who are different than you.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's all it is. And again, we're supposed to, racism doesn't exist. You're not allowed to call them extremists. You're not allowed to call them racist, despite what they're saying. And you might occasionally see someone that you think is a leftist going on that show and not bringing up this absolute dehumanizing language, these narratives designed to get white conservatives to be terrified of how their societies are being ruined by non-white people. And paired with all of the violence we've already seen, the threats of future violence, Tucker Carlson is a part of that, pushing towards ideological-based violence, race-based violence, and it's perfectly okay. He's not going to get any trouble. He is going to say that stuff this year. He's going to make tens of millions of dollars, conservatively, for saying these explicitly racist things, and then we're just expected to go on with our lives. Okay, with that, we're going to move to something a little bit different, although there's a little bit of misogyny, a little bit of racism mixed in here. Let's jump into this video.
But I wanted to address Ms. Salter directly. I just want you to know that in the 4 years that I've sat on this committee, I have never seen members of Congress, Republican or Democrat, disrespect a witness in the way that I have seen them disrespect you today. I do not care what party they are in. I've never seen anything like that. And for the gentleman of Louisiana and the comfort that he felt in yelling at you like that, there's more than one way to get a point across. And frankly, men who treat women like that in public, I fear how they treat them in private.
So that is AOC standing up for environmental lawyer Raya Salter, who had come to talk about how toxic petrochemicals were killing black and brown people throughout Louisiana. And she was absolutely berated by Representative Clay Higgins. Now, I know many of you are probably going to say AOC is being hyperbolic. It couldn't have been that bad. Okay, well, I will let you decide. Take a look at some of what Clay Higgins had to say at Raya Salter.
Everything you have, your clothes, your glasses, the car you got her on, your phone, the table you're sitting at, the chair, the carpet under your feet, everything you've got is petrochemical products. What would you do with that? Tell the world.
if I had that power in the world, I don't need that power, because what I would do is ask you, sir, from Louisiana.
I'm giving you the power. You're presenting.
To search you, sir, from Louisiana, to search your heart and understand why the EPA knows that toxic petrochemical facilities are some of the most toxic, polluting facilities in the world and are killing Black people throughout Louisiana.
So
my first thing would be
you
to search your heart and ask your God what you are doing to the Black
That's
and
our
poor
God.
People
I make no apologies
in
about
Louisiana.
That.
You know, that would be my first thing.
The
fossil fuel industry that owns your state is destroying the earth and the natural world. And that is a fact, sir.
You know what you got, young lady? You got a lot of noise, but you got no answers.
Ugh. The end of that is just disgusting. People are saying that they heard him call her boo. I don't know. He was talking over her the literal entire time. She is there to testify about how people are dying because of chemicals. He is there to continue to defend that industry and get campaign donations from them. That's what it is. And he's not going to defer to her, give her any respect. She's his opponent, very, very literally. She is an expert on the environment. He does not want that expertise to be allowed to exist, to influence the conversation. And so he just shouts over her. So I'm glad that AOC responded in the way that she did. We're going to get to a little bit more of AOC in a moment. But David, what did you make of that back and forth?
I think we do need disagreements and public debate in Congress and committees and whatnot. So I don't have a problem with the sort of the opposing points of view. I think where AOC really sort of strikes a chord, though, is there are so many different ways that this congressman, if he wanted to sort of argue with this witness, could have done it. And he could have done it in a more sort of an intellectual and perhaps more sort of engaging style. But to be sort of mean and to sort of talk down to somebody and to sort of use, you know, phrases to dismiss them, that's where I think there's a meanness that gets through Congress now that I don't think existed 20 or 30 years ago. And once upon a time, people would say, okay, I don't care about this hearing. I'm just not going to show up. Now it's as if people not only show up and try to fight with the witnesses, but try to score points and say stuff that is so outrageous and so harsh so they can get the clips then played on Fox News so it can help them with their fundraising so that people on the right can say, aha, he's owning the liberals or whatever it is. And that's a horrible incentive.
100%. I'm going to close. Let's go to just this last bit of AOC.
I would hope that someone would issue you an apology, but because I don't believe he will, I want to apologize to you about the conduct of this committee and what we just witnessed.
Thank you, ma'am. I just wanted to thank you. And you've provided so much leadership and courage. They can come for me all day long.
Well, let's get them today then.
I liked her comments. I liked the response from the lawyer even more. And with that, we do have to go to our second break. So when we come back, we're going to be diving into some footage. Did Marjorie Greene kick a young environmental activist? We'll have the news, the analysis of that for you after this. Okay, with that, let's jump into the most bonkers story we've covered all week, starting off with this.
Second Amendment, how does the Second Amendment prevent gun
violence?
You're
the one that believes that the insurrection
You're blocking a member of Congress.
Excuse me, ma'am.
You can't block members of Congress.
I was in Boulder during the Colorado shooting.
So that was Marjorie Greene, and yes, you appear to have seen what you appeared to have seen, which is Marjorie Greene kicking the back of the legs of Mariana Pakora, Deputy Comms Director of Voters Tomorrow. We kept the video going so you could see. They did a close-up at the end of her self-satisfied look. She was so happy with herself following the kicking the kid. The interesting thing about this video isn't just the kick, which we're going to get into. It's that she shared it. Yes, Marjorie Taylor Greene herself posted this video on Twitter. She was very happy with it. And she accompanied the video of her kicking a child with, "These foolish cowards want the government to take away guns and the rights of parents to defend their children in schools." They're activists who don't want more of the people in school, like their age, to be murdered in mass shootings. And so because of that, because they went all the way to D.C. to appeal to our government, She labels them foolish cowards. She has, of course, gone to D.C. in the past to follow around a young gun activist and hound them. She doesn't believe that any of these shootings are real. She's a conspiracy theorist. But these kids are cowards. Now, before we jump into our commentary, though, that first video, it's a little bit hard to see. So we decided we're going to CSI this thing. We're going to zoom in. We're going to enhance. We're going to slow it down. Let's jump into the second video. Can you see that there? Yeah, when you're following behind someone, you could accidentally hit their leg with your leg, but she was staring down for multiple seconds before she hit the girl. And if that's not clear enough, this morning, a new angle came out. Let's go to this third video. Now, that video is important so that you can see Marjorie Greene was not hemmed in from behind by people and had to hit this person. There was tons of room. She was walking to keep up with the activist before she contacted her. David, this is obviously ridiculous, so apologies, but what do you make of this?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I'm glad you pointed out that Marjorie Taylor Greene was sort of chasing David Hogg, whatever it was, a year ago, from the Parklands activist, and was mad that he wouldn't stop and talk to her. And there she is, and she's not willing to stop and talk to people herself when she's being asked questions. So she's a bit of a hypocrite. But secondly, I had an experience with Marjorie Taylor Greene and her entourage down at CPAC a couple of months ago. And the guy who's sort of bald with the beard, who I think is his chief of staff, when I tried to go up with the microphone, he sort of pretended that I had hit him and he fell back. As if he wanted to sort of do some sort of assault case against me. And it was nonsense. And we had video proving that, of course, he was just taking a fall and I had no contact with him. But it's so interesting that here's Marjorie Taylor Greene actually kicking somebody, which is assault. And again, she's doing it from a team that is so sensitive to people who might get, you know, close to them and rub their elbows or whatnot. And so I just hope that this, you know, this liberal activist, I hope she goes to the D.C. police, to the Capitol police, and says, okay, I'm going to file an assault charge. I'm going to turn over all the videos here. You take a look. Go interview Marjorie Taylor Greene, and let's see what the law says about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I look, everybody can have a different opinion of this. For me, I'm not a lawyer. It might literally be assault. I don't think that she should be locked up for the kick or whatever. The activist seems okay. That's going to be up to her, whether she wants to press charges or whatever. For me, it's less about that. And it's more about this is who this woman is.
Yes.
Like she is. You cannot stress enough how just garbage of a person she is, how terrible of a person she is. She is just the worst of us, you know, in a way that you cannot, she cannot get past her awful predispositions for even moments. All she had to do was keep walking. And she decided, no, I want to kick this kid. I hate this kid. I hate that this kid is trying to stop, guns from being so free-flowing that we have constant mass shootings. I'm going to kick her. I'm a congresswoman. What I'm going to do today is I'm going to kick a kid. That's who she is. And I'm sick of our government being filled up with absolute pieces of garbage like this.
Absolutely right. I mean, she's garbage. She's a moron. And I think it's underscored by the fact that if Marjorie Taylor Greene was really confident in her position, you would stop and say, look, we're going to have this argument for 25 or 30 seconds, and I'm going to win, and here's why. Here's my point. Here's your point. Here's why your point is wrong. Now I have to go. I've given you a few seconds. But yep. The fact that she's not even willing to stop and try to sort of engage in any sort of debate and is so frightened that she has to sort of walk along and have her security guard and her chief of staff on either side goes to show this is somebody who's entitled, she's arrogant, and she is that piece of garbage that you mentioned.
100%. Okay, well, we're going to see what happens with that, if anything. But for now, we're going to move on to just a little bit of fun gossip to close out the first hour. We're trying to make the Friday shows a little bit lighter. This does deal with some important material, but let's just dive into a little bit of fun. Throughout the Trump presidency, Melania Trump didn't have much to say, certainly nothing critical to say about the many horrendous things her husband did, whether it was personal scandals in his own personal life, his affairs, and the many, 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 many allegations of sexual assault. But obviously, more substantively, the horrible things he did, the Muslim ban, the building of the wall, the wanting to nuke hurricanes. Or, of course, his biggest failure, which was COVID. It turns out, though, behind closed doors, she did have thoughts and she did have things to say. First Lady Melania Trump was, quote, rattled by the coronavirus and convinced that Trump was screwing up. That's according to a forthcoming book, The Divider, Trump in the White House, 2017 to 2021, by New York Times chief White House correspondent Peter Blake and New Yorker staff writer and CNN global affairs analyst Susan Glasser. So that's coming out on Tuesday. She apparently told her husband, you're blowing this. This is serious. It's going to be really bad, and you need to take it more seriously than you're taking it. He just dismissed her. You worry too much. She remembered him saying, forget it. And of course, if this is true, she was right. He did not take it seriously. He, much more importantly, convinced Republican politicians to not take it seriously. He convinced basically every MAGA person to not take it seriously. And we sailed past 1 million dead as a country as a result of that. They followed it up. Now, he is less personally culpable on this, with a campaign to make people feel like the vaccine is not necessary and, in fact, might kill you. So they effectively did everything they could for multiple years to make sure that as many people as possible got COVID, got hospitalized, and died. Apparently, Melania Trump did try to put some pressure on him, but he was incredibly dismissive, and as a result, many people died. David, what are your thoughts?
Well, Donald Trump was dismissive of her, not only, I guess, for COVID, but just sort of in general. I mean, I think most people don't realize Donald Trump and Melania, they did not share a bedroom at the White House. They lived in separate living quarters. And I understand the same thing in Mar-a-Lago, that at least, you know, in Washington, Donald Trump sort of considered her as just sort of a prop. She's the first lady and she has a ceremonial role, but God forbid Donald Trump should ever listen to anything Melania said and took it seriously. He was very dismissive of her time after time. So I'm sure that whatever she said, yeah, good for Melania Trump that she said it, but I just think it had absolutely no impact. Donald Trump probably doesn't even remember her saying it because he tunes out most of what his wife said.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, he absolutely despises women, has no respect for them whatsoever. So that's certainly a part of it. But I also think that, I mean, he wasn't going to listen to anyone, really. Like, he didn't care. He just, he could have saved so many lives. And more importantly for him, if he had taken COVID 20% more seriously, I believe he would be president right now. I think that the election was so close that if he had just given a little bit of the sense that he cared about this and he wanted to protect people's lives in a super close election where everyone was thinking about the pandemic, I think that could have saved him. But he didn't. He didn't do it. And she was 100% right. And, like, you know, she's still with him. So but all of their relationship stuff is on them. But like, I think about, like, how you might occasionally be, like, disappointed in your partner or whatever. But very few of us, I assume, will ever have to think the person I'm married to could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives and they didn't care to. It would have been very easy. It was entirely in their power. And I told them they should do it. And they just said that they didn't care. And so hundreds of thousands of people died. And I'm married to that person. That is such a weird position to be in.
I think it's weird when I hear, oh, you don't care enough about the groundhogs living under the deck. Now imagine somebody telling you you don't care about hundreds of thousands of people who are dying. I mean, that's talk about marital tensions.
Yeah. No, imagine if you found out that, like, David was responsible for the deaths of 500,000 groundhogs. Thankfully, he is not. No groundhogs were harmed in the making of the Damage Report. Anyway, that is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the Damage Report. Everyone on the linear platforms and on the podcast, thank you so much as always for listening and watching. But if you're on Twitch or YouTube or other platforms, we've got a lot more show in the aftermath, including the Garbage People of the Week. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Chris Frederick, member for 21 months, says the old Trojan migrant move backfired spectacularly on DeSantis. Make him pay for it, Florida. I mean, it is backfired to some extent, but not for the right wingers. They will only get the news from Fox News. Fox News is ecstatic about it. They will just say that everybody on Martha's Vineyard is freaking out, even if it's not true. Like, you don't need to really plan well. You don't need to be clever or smart on the right wing. Just do whatever you want, and you will be protected by the insulation of the news bubble.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.